Welcome to Life and Sirens, Behind and On the Scene, a podcast by first responders. We're your hosts, Sophie,
Jamie,
and Aubrey.
The content provided in this podcast is for informational and educational purposes only and should not be considered medical advice. The views and opinions expressed by the hosts and guests are their own and do not necessarily reflect the official policies or positions of any medical institutions, emergency medical services, or healthcare organizations. Patient privacy is a top priority, and all discussions involving real-world emergency situations are de-identified and altered to ensure confidentiality. Always consult with a qualified healthcare professional or your local EMS protocols before making any decisions regarding patient care or medical practices. Listener discretion is advised, as some topics may include discussions of real-world emergency situations.
Welcome to another episode of Life and Sirens podcast. Today we're kicking off a new series that we're doing, which is Radio Traffic. These will be listener tales from you all, and we are very excited to hear them. Today we have three to share with you. So I'm going to kick things off with a story from Tyler from Massachusetts. Tyler titled this EMS Ghost Story. Hey guys, first off, I just want to say how much I absolutely love your podcast. Seriously. It's been my go-to during long shifts, commutes, and even on my days off. You all bring such an authentic voice to EMS, humor, education, and real talk in a way that keeps me hooked every episode. It's a breath of fresh air to have a space where we can connect over the chaos, passion, and weirdness that comes with life in EMS. So thank you for doing what you do. Thank you, Tyler. All right, Tyler says, on to the good stuff. My EMS ghost story. I've been in EMS for a while now, and like many of us, I've experienced my fair share of odd moments, but this one still gives me chills every time I think about it. And before you ask, no, it's not patient-related. This one's all about the station. All right. It was a slow night, the kind that almost feels too quiet, the calm before the storm kind of vibe. Our station was this older brick building, one of those that's been around since forever, full of creaky floors, flickering lights, and stories older than anyone working here. There were always talk about this place being haunted, but honestly, most of us laughed it off. EMS humor, right? That night, I was the only one awake around 2 a.m., catching up on reports in the day room. The lights above me started flickering, but I figured it was just the ancient wiring doing its thing. Then I heard footsteps, heavy ones, the ones that are slow and deliberate, like someone in boots. Then I heard... I'm so sorry. Like someone in boots coming down the hallway that led to the apparatus bay. Thinking it was my partner or another crew member grabbing something from the rig, I called out, "Hey, you good?" No answer. The footsteps stopped right outside the crew room door. I waited for the door to open, but it didn't. I got up, opened the door myself. Nothing. The hallway was empty. I checked the bay, both rigs parked, untouched. No one was there. I went back inside, telling myself I was just tired and hearing things. Not even 5 minutes later, the same footsteps started again. This time, they moved down the hall, past the crew room, and into the bunk room. I thought maybe someone had come in through the back door, so I got up again and checked. Still nothing. Now, here's where it gets really weird. I went into the bunk room to see if my partner was up, but he was out cold. Not even the fake sleep situation. Full on snoring.
I love that your partner has fake sleeped you before.
I know, because I really think, correct us if we're wrong, but it sounds like you're in a firehouse, so I'm sure chaos happens.
Right, pranks do ensue. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
As I turned to leave, the closet door in the corner creaked open by itself. It wasn't a soft, slow creak either. It opened fast, like someone had yanked it. I just stood there, frozen. I also would be, Yeah. Probably, like, on the floor. Yeah, I truthfully do not know. Like, I would have yelled at my partner. You're getting up.
Oh, yeah. I would have been so mad.
Absolutely.
We're leaving the station.
I'm about to get ghosty murdered.
Yes.
Like, you are getting up.
You can be conscious right now.
Yeah, I'm so sorry. Then the radio, the actual base radio, made that weird static noise it sometimes does when it's about to pick up a call. But dispatch wasn't transmitting anything. It just let out this long, low static, and then a voice. It was too distorted to make out clearly, but it wasn't dispatch, and it definitely wasn't one of our units. By this point, I was fully freaked out. I tried waking my partner. There you go. That was a good move. I tried waking my partner, but he just grumbled and turned over. This would be Austin.
Oh, yeah. Austin would be like, Amy, wait a minute.
Austin was the ghost.
Yeah, turns out. The next morning, I casually mentioned it to one of the older medics who had been at the station forever. He didn't even flinch. Oh, yeah, that happens sometimes. Oh, thanks for warning me, bro.
Oh, my goodness.
He said, we think it's old Cap. He died a few years back. Heart attack right in the bay.
Oh, yeah, it's definitely old Cap.
That also, is... like, if that isn't the EMS way to go.
Yeah, that is. Mm-hmm. I mean. And some say he still makes his rounds. Cool. Cool, cool, cool. Also same. Ever since that night, every time I'm at the station and hear something weird, a door creak, footsteps, even a random radio blip, I just say, all right, Cap, I'm on it. And hope that's enough to keep him happy.
I mean, that's all you can do.
Absolutely.
I'm scared of him.
Yeah, I just get up and start mopping stuff. Honestly. And be like, this has to be it.
Yep. It's going to be the cleanest station in your entire county. Anyway, I hope you guys enjoyed that one. It's one of my favorite stories to share during the night shifts when things get too quiet. Thanks again for making such an awesome podcast. You guys seriously make the tough days easier and the quiet nights more fun. Stay safe out there. Tyler.
Thanks,
that
Tyler.
Was really sweet.
That was really sweet.
Also, if you just want to periodically write in, if you have any updates, love to hear it.
Oh, yeah.
We can make a whole saga.
Absolutely. We would love to hear about Cap's shenanigans and what he's up to.
Yeah.
We have a main radio at our station that we all work at.
Oh, yeah. This is wild.
Yeah. And it will occasionally just start playing like either some kind of talk show or the creepiest classical style music.
Yes, why is it always classical?
Heard?
Like there's always a violin.
Yes. Yeah. It picks up like some AM radio channel that is basically like the PBS of radio, and it just picks up some like weird nighttime shows, and it is so creepy because it's such low volume that all of a sudden you're sitting there and it'll just be like me.
Yes, whenever you're like running. Honestly, does anybody else feel like in the middle of the night when you're running tickets in the bay that someone's watching you? Because I feel like that in our bay.
Yes.
You don't feel like that?
I don't stay up till 2 in the morning writing run tickets, so.
I do.
No, I do. I get the vibes, like the hair on the
not
back of
always,
your neck stands
but
up.
But sometimes I'm like, I'm just going to go in because the vibes are off.
Yo, what if the old Burton ghost came over?
I'm surprised it hasn't at this point.
It might
I think
have.
It is through the radio because it's only ever at like 2 a.m. when
you know,
this happens.
That's why it's weird. It's like at it's a creepy. Weird time during the night. I'm like, this is the witching hour.
It is.
Well,
it is.
Also, so we talked about old Burton. So old Burton... We just say that because we have three buildings on this, like, county lot. One is an old house that they turned into an EMS station. Like, the garage is literally an EMS bay, and it's so tiny, and everyone hits the walls all the time. And then we have, like, our administrative office, and then we have this, like, pretty brand new station. What, like...
Yeah, okay. I think New Burton was, like, 2018.
Yeah, so it's much newer than this old house. And this house, I'm telling you, it is terrifying. We have some ghost stories from that place.
For
Ashley
sure.
and I heard a growl.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Talk about footsteps. I was
giggles.
Asleep in the upstairs bedroom. So, like, we added two crews there. There used to be just one. Then there was two. There was this weird, like, records room that held all
still
of our
there.
Old EMS records.
And there's, like, tapes.
Yes. Like, paper tickets and just, like, all the things. And it is, like, shelves and shelves and shelves of these records.
In, like, an unfinished attic.
Yes. And they just covered them with white hospital sheets, like, perfect EMS fashion. They said, oh, they're gone now.
HIPAA blocker.
Yep. HIPAA blocker. And so our beds were in here, and they just, like, tossed the beds in there. Well, we didn't move them, and so they were foot to foot. So creepy. And so when you sit up in the middle of the night when you get tones, you're just, like, staring at each other.
Nope.
Which is hilarious Hard and nope. super weird. Well, so one night we're getting ready to go to bed. And my partner and I, we hear these footsteps that are clear as day, footsteps coming up the stairs. Because we had to go up and downstairs when we got calls.
Very steep.
Very steep. Like old school, like 90s Large. Or like really like 70s, 80s stairs that didn't have any like general size.
And they're like carpeted. Well, they were.
And we just heard these footsteps stomping up these stairs. And we just assumed like, oh, Austin and Tracy are back. And so I like hollered. Nobody answered. So I like stuck my head out. Nobody was there. And so I was like, hey, come here. And so I grabbed my partner, and she was armed with trauma shears, and I was just like, ting, 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 in the background. And we go downstairs, and their truck's not there. And I was like, So we clear the station. There is nobody there. And then we just sat in there terrified.
I mean, that's what I would... It's very unsettling in there. You don't need to just go into a place and the vibe... You're like, this is bad. Something's wrong.
Mm-hmm. It's almost like chilly vibes.
Yes. Like, mm-hmm. Yeah, something is just... Yeah. The air is not very good over there.
Right. So that's Old Burton. And we're just wondering if those ghosties have skedaddled on over to the news station.
This is nicer. And it is.
They got
it's
good
roomier.
Taste.
Yeah, it is roomier,
they
for sure.
They classed up, for sure. Yeah.
Well, thank you, Tyler. That was fun.
So this next story is from Layton from Alabama. It is titled, That One Time a Patient Tried to Kidnap Me. Hey, ladies. Let me just start off by saying your podcast is absolutely killer. I'm hooked. I binge episodes all the time. I'm almost caught up. The way you all balance real EMS talk with humor and honesty makes it feel like I'm sitting around the station swapping stories. Thanks for creating something that feels like home for so many of us in the field. Now, on to the reason I'm writing. I've been meaning to share this insane call with you. It's one of my craziest, I can't believe this happened, moments in EMS. And don't worry, guys, all of the details have been changed for privacy. Now into the good stuff. It was one of those shifts that had been oddly smooth. Too smooth. And we all know that's basically a setup for chaos. We got dispatched for what was labeled as a possible altered mental status in a more rural part of town. Nothing out of the ordinary. Until it very much was. We pull up to this old half-abandoned house at the end of a long dirt road, the kind of place that immediately gives you nope vibes. The caller met us outside. Oh, that's a bad sign already.
Oh, yeah.
The caller met us outside and waved us toward the backyard where the patient was sitting alone by an old, rusted-out car.
Dum-dum.
Not good again. From a distance, they looked calm enough, but the closer we got, the more I could feel something was off. The gut feeling EMS providers know all too well.
You gotta trust that thing.
That is real. Mm-hmm. Spidey senses.
The patient was pacing, muttering to themselves, clearly in some kind of paranoid state. I approached, did my usual intro, and tried to ease into things. At first, it was going okay. The patient was engaging, though definitely spiraling into some pretty wild conspiracy talk.
We've all met those patients.
Yep. Sometimes they start making too much sense, but that's for another time.
Aubrey, don't join a cult.
Not again.
Dun-dun.
They kept asking if I was the one sent to help them escape. I tried steering the conversation toward getting into the ambulance, promising safety and calm, and it worked. For about 30 seconds. As we neared the rig, the patient's demeanor changed on a dime. They grabbed my arm with surprising strength and yanked me toward their beat-up car, shouting, "We need to go now! They're coming!"
Oh, God.
I was stunned. That split-second moment where your brain's still catching up, but muscle memory kicked in fast. I twisted away, tried to ground the situation verbally, but they weren't hearing it. Their grip tightened, and for a hot second, I realized they were actually trying to get me into their car. My partner, who was thankfully paying attention, hopped out of the rig, hit the radio for PD backup, and started approaching. That must have startled the patient, because they let go and bolted for the driver's seat, fumbling for keys that thankfully weren't there. Lesson learned from past calls, I pocketed them early. That was a good
move.
Yeah, that was good.
Good thinking.
Also, what was your partner doing just chillaxing in the Bamber lamps?
I guess they were walking back.
Right, maybe.
And I don't know, maybe, sometimes I get in the back and it's before the patient's living.
Yeah, me too.
The patient sat there gripping the steering wheel, completely lost in their own world until PD rolled up moments later and de-escalated the situation. Here's the wild twist. We later found out that the patient wasn't trying to hurt me. In their altered state, they thought they were saving me. Convinced I was some trap figure in their personal narrative, it was one of those moments that was terrifying in the moment, but kind of heartbreaking once you process it. EMS throws some wild curveballs, but this one, it stuck with me. Anyway, I hope you guys enjoyed that little chaos nugget.
I love
that you called it a chaos nugget, because that's exactly what that was. Keep doing what you're doing. Your podcast is seriously a game changer for so many of us. Well, thank you.
Thanks,
for your submission.
Also, impressive. The pocketed them early on the keys.
Where were the keys?
Ooh,
were they?
Good
they
move.
Have them?
Yeah, were they in their pocket or were they in their car or was it on the hood?
I don't know, but I also would have just frozen.
I need more details, Layton. Yeah.
Yeah. Do you want to write back?
For sure. For sure. We need more details. And basically, we need to teach SoFound not to get kidnapped.
Yeah, which is actually very important. I'm not good at that.
All right, guys. We are going to do a little bit of a vibe shift. We all know that we have those crazy calls that are just wild, but we all know we also have those crazy calls that really stick with us later on down the road. This is a story that was sent to us from a medic, Caitlin, here in Tennessee. But during the time of this story, she was actually a dispatcher in Colorado. So this is the call I carry the closest, the call that forever changed me. It's not a call from the truck, but a call from my time as a dispatcher. Hopefully this makes sense and captures at least part of all the emotions that came with it during and after. So a little background first on how we worked as a comm center. We usually had three dispatchers and one supervisor on who did not work the radio or the phones unless we were slammed. We were the only PSAP covering six counties and roughly 7,000 square miles.
Holy crap.
It was a lot. We worked both 911 phone calls, non-emergency slash admin phone calls, as well as two law channels and any EMS fire channel that had an open call. We had 12 main channels, six law, six EMS fire. We worked all the time with a handful that were monitored but weren't in full-time use. We were responsible for a total of almost 70 different agencies.
I didn't even know this was a thing.
That's insane.
That's crazy.
Although many we didn't talk to often, and usually only during the daylight hours. On a Saturday, I had just settled in for my 6 p 4a shift. It was my Friday. The week had been overall uneventful, and I was scheduled for my regular night shift on the ambulance the next night. Y'all, I feel like this is how every story starts. Like, it had overall been uneventful.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right?
It's interesting to think about, too. That's EMS for you.
Right. And I was scheduled for my regular night shift on the ambulance the next night. At approximately 17:55, all of 2 minutes into my shift, I answered a 911 call from a male who stated that his girlfriend had killed herself. He was very emotional and crying. He didn't know where he was, so I had to use the 911 map to find them. They were on a 15-20 minute drive, 12 miles outside the city. They were on two-track dirt roads. They were on roads no one had ever heard of. I dispatched the call to deputies and paged EMS. This was my third to fourth suicide call in 48 hours. Our policy was to stay on the phone until deputies or EMS arrived on scene. I went back to talking to the reporting party. Asked the usual questions we do in this type of call. He told me she'd shot herself in the driver's seat of the car. He was pretty sure it was in her head. He thought she was dead. The car was locked. He couldn't break the window because the tint was too thick. There was no one we could call for him. There was nothing else we could do for him except send help. 7 minutes into the call, the conversation went like this. RP. I found her talking to her kids. Me. Was she talking to them on the phone? RP starts crying hard again. No. Me. Where are the kids? At this question, the dispatch center went quiet and still. It was a weird feeling. RP continues, hard crying. Me. Where are the kids? This was asked in rapid fire and with growing urgency that added to the odd, weird, quiet stillness that was in the dispatch center. RP. She shot him. I keyed up on both the law channel and EMS channel and updated them. For the next 7 to 9 minutes, I listened to him tell me about the day. It was the longest 7 to 9 minutes of my life. He said the four of them had spent the day together, doing a lot of kid things with the boys. When it was time to go home, his girlfriend had told him she was scared to go home because of her husband. Uh-oh. She told him her husband was abusive. They were working on a separation and divorce. He said he gave her his gun and followed her to her house. Except she didn't go home. She went out into the middle of nowhere. He said he'd lost track of her vehicle for a few minutes, but then found her parked where they were. He said she refused to talk to him, refused to open the door. He said then she shot the boys and then herself. Shortly after that, deputies arrived on scene. It took deputies a few minutes to break through the tint on one window, and then they confirmed. Three dead. Once the confirmation came through, my supervisor relieved me, taking my channels and giving me a chance to step away. I walked to the back parking lot, stood behind my truck, and said, "Holy fuck." And I started crying. I cried hard. I couldn't have stopped the tears from coming even if I had tried. The adrenaline dump was heavy. It took a few minutes, pulled myself together, and went back to work. Because that's what we do. On the truck or behind a headset. After they were done on the scene, the first two deputies stopped by dispatch. All of us ready for a big hug. One of them had a bloodhound, canine named Blitz. Blitz was not small. He was every bit of 100 pounds, with big paws and giant floppy ears. He brought Blitz in, who normally has to run and smell every corner of the center before he'll even consider some behind-the-ear scratches. This night, he ran in, stood on my lap, leaning all the way in, as if giving me a hug.
Stop, I'm literally about to cry.
I know.
The dog.
He stood there refusing to move until he was satisfied his doggo hug was long enough. When I listened to the playback after he told me about the kids, you could hear me pause for just a second and take a deep breath to keep my emotions in check before keying up on the radio. The deputies and EMS crew later said they could tell by the change in my voice that my update was bad. In the playback of the radio traffic, as the deputies acknowledged, you could hear the change in their engines as the engines downshifted, with the deputies now had the gas as far down as it would go. My supervisor and regional manager reached out to the agency's peer support team, who reached out the next morning. A CISM was done a few days later, open to all cops, EMS, the coroners, and all dispatchers who were on duty at the time. My regional manager filed an open-ended workers' comp claim for any future counseling and mental health I might need. That's awesome.
That's pretty cool. Yeah, I didn't know that was possible.
When I went back to work the following Wednesday, I was working with a cocky, new, young guy. He started my night with, "You know, it took him 7 minutes to tell you about the kids." I'd asked him how and why he knew that. He told me he listened to the playback recording of which meant that he had not only read the CAD notes, but went to the console I was at that night, dug backwards until he found the 911 call, and he listened to it from start to finish.
Bro, what?
Right? Who would? Why?
That's not necessary.
When he told me, right, it's not appropriate. When he told me he'd listened, it straight up pissed me off. I had to step out, cool down, and not let my hot-headed temper get the best of me. Then I went to my supervisor and told her it wasn't his place to listen. He had no need to, and he had no right to. Later, as I worked through it all, I realized I had felt that he'd invaded a call and the space that I now carried it in. I felt disrespected and the lack of taste in the approach that he took to talk to me about the call. I also realized he was new and just hadn't had enough time to experience to understand how a call like that can and will affect those involved. I sat down with him, one-on-one, with the supervisor, and explained my point of view, how the call wait had affected me, and how his actions had made me feel. We talked about how his eagerness to soak in all he could about the job and being a first responder, there were better ways to approach it all. He apologized, and he didn't do anything like that again. He was also talked to about listening to calls that were not his.
Yeah.
As the investigation came to a close, the lead investigator, who is a friend, met me to give me an update outside of work so he wouldn't be interrupted. She said they had a history of DVs between the two, but that she was the aggressor. The day before she did what she did, the husband had called to file another report. She was an RN, working at a detox center, which is where she met the boyfriend. She was now facing the possibility of losing her nursing license and custody of the boys. Her and the boyfriend had been together for around a year. The day before, she'd found out that the husband had a girlfriend and she lost it. The day of, she had spent the day telling the boys how much they were going to love heaven, how good it was going to be. She'd made many suicidal statements throughout the day. Despite all of that, the boyfriend still gave her his gun after showing her how it worked. At her house, they found her journal. The last entry was a rage rambling, and it ended with, "If I can't have the boys, no one can." The boyfriend was shocked to hear that she was the aggressor, not the victim, with the husband. In the end, while they could have charged the boyfriend ultimately, he was not charged. They decided, including the DA, that living with the guilt of his actions was going to be enough. My mom was and still is a dispatcher with the state. This allowed us to read each other's funny, crazy, and wild calls, since it's all the same CAD. Knowing I would only tell my family the basics of the call, my supervisors reached out to my mom's regional manager, who in turn gave my mother the incident number so she could read the call. My mom let my dad and sister know the details. I had not, and at the time was not ready to tell them. In the days after that call, I was mad. I had a lot of anger. I had a lot of questions, most of which would never or couldn't ever be answered. I had a lot of anxiety when the 911 phone rang. My patience was low, my temper was short. I was snapping at callers. I was keeping myself at work, both dispatch and on the ambulance. I wasn't sleeping well. I was having nightmares. I was also checked out in my personal life. I wasn't present, even with friends and family. I had mood swings that were rough and often came without warning. I was not okay. I was struggling. I was struggling hard. With time and a great support system, who let me have the time I needed to process within myself, made sure I knew I was not alone, checked in daily, but wasn't too pushy. Sitting with me while not doing anything except hanging out and binge-watching Netflix and listening as many times as I needed, I started to heal. Journaling let me get out the feelings and emotions in a way that didn't require them to make any sense. The gym gave me the space and outlet to work through it all physically. The gym saw more tears, anger, frustration, and sadness than anyone else. With time, I was able to answer the 911 phone without anxiety. My patience and temper were no longer short. I started being present again. Laughter became the best medicine. The memorial was two short rebar pieces driven into the ground. There was a single bald eagle feather that was wrapped in leather, attached to each rebar piece. The boys were part Native American, and I silently cried. It was here that I found the most closure. I had a lot of anger for the boyfriend and his part in the murder of the boys. It took well over a year for me to let that anger go. While to this day, I still do not know or understand how after hearing everything she said that day, he could still give her his gun, or why he didn't call for help earlier in the day, or why he didn't take her to the ER for any help. I do understand that he was in an emotionally controlling, manipulative relationship with a narcissist. The anger I had for her, I was able to let go of easier. I know that doesn't make a lot of sense, but I knew that since she was dead, we could never get the answers. I came to accept that the answer to how could she do that was never going to be answered. In the following years, around the anniversary, I went out to the memorial at the scene. It's taken me a long time, with a lot of post-trauma work, to get to a place where I will talk about it. It's still a call I don't talk about often, but now I'll willingly talk about it. If it were not for the support system that I have and the healthy coping mechanisms that I've learned do work for me, there's no doubt that the aftermath, the weight, and the struggle would have had a messy and darker and significantly longer ending. I still don't know how exactly or why this call affected me so deeply. It changed me. It's the call I carry the closest to my heart. This is the first time I've laid it all out in one go. My hope is to maybe help others who've been through something similar. I hope that you guys know the impact you have on those around, in person, and that the podcast reaches. You and all of the work you do are changing the industry and helping more than you'll ever know. So thank you with all of my heart for all of it. If this all doesn't make sense, just let me know. You know where to find me. I did my best just to keep my ADHD brain on track. That's it.
Well, I have literally tears in my eyes because that took a lot of courage, Caitlin, to share. And I think there's so much that we can learn from that. One thing that I want to point out is that she had that new hire that she was training, and I know that he probably didn't know better, but I think it's good for all of us to hear is that, like, try not to always talk so jovial or joke about some of the calls that we go on. They can really affect other people, especially ones of that magnitude. Like, sometimes I know that we, like, kind of have some dark humor, and that's okay, but especially him not knowing her. He doesn't know how she responds to things. I think just keep that in mind when you're going to talk about calls that you weren't on.
Right. I think that the fact that he wasn't on it is such a big deal because, like, you didn't listen to that. You didn't have to do that. You didn't go there and see it. Like, to feel like he had the right to comment on something like that at all. Like, we're all nosy. We all read the cat.
For sure.
We all dig in a little bit.
Keep it to yourself.
But I would never find that medic and say something as insensitive as that.
Or, like, when he was questioning, like, oh, yeah. It took you so long to find... Okay.
Yeah, like, you didn't hear about it for 7 minutes.
Yeah.
Like,
okay.
Bro.
It still sucked.
Yeah. And also, we had this conversation earlier today that the fact that your brain, as, like, a human being, did not anticipate that someone was capable of such darkness is not a flaw in you.
No.
Like, the fact that your brain was not like, well, I better ask and make sure that she didn't take anyone out with her.
Right. Like, it's unbelievable that that happened.
Right. Yeah. Like, it is actually, like, a good human trait that you could not imagine something that terrible. And I think we all are hard on ourselves that we're like, why didn't I see that coming? Or why didn't I know that? Or why didn't I ask them about that? Because you're not supposed to. Your brain
is wild.
Yeah. Your brain is not supposed to, by default, go to that place.
Yeah.
I also, and there's been calls that I struggled with and that I didn't struggle with as badly until someone questioned what happened or made up their own narrative about what happened. We all know about those. We've talked about those. And that is it. Like she said, she was angry. It is infuriating. Like, stop. If you weren't there, truly, you didn't read the run ticket, you haven't spoken to the person, do not comment on it. Don't spread rumors. Like, it is extremely damaging, not only to that person, but potentially their career. It could lead them to have to go through a lot. Let me just tell you.
Like, I'm sure Caitlin's experienced this as well, especially having that much time in dispatch. But when someone starts to tell you about a call that you ran.
Yeah, you're like, that was literally my call.
And I'm like, that was me. And that's also wrong.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But that's wild to experience. And I love that this is from a dispatching perspective.
Yeah.
Because I don't think that we give them enough credit in the first responder world. And just because you're behind a console does not mean that you do not deal with, like, the emotion of everything. Like, you're the one that has to get the information out of these people. And you hear, like, the very first, like, rawest moments of an emergency. And then you have no closure.
I know we talk about us not having closure. They really don't have any.
Right? Like, when we get there, the phone hangs up.
Yeah.
And that's it. There's no more context.
And think about how traumatic it is, because you can hear these like extremely emotional calls, and then we get there, and then it's something, it's still traumatic for everybody, but it's something very reversible, like an overdose, or, you know, maybe they think the person is dead and they are not, and they're like, I think y'all had a call recently where the patient was absolutely not even close to
that. Oh, they were so fine.
But they have no idea. Yeah. Like, and you were like, oh, this is fine. They don't get that closure.
Our adrenaline can calm down very quickly, because I look and I'm like, okay, well, this is just a pappy that is throwing up and his family is convinced that he's dead.
Yeah.
He is not. But dispatch doesn't get that.
They just
so
get
when
the
our
hysterics.
Adrenaline stops, theirs is still pumping because they're waiting for us to get on the radio and be like, no CPR in progress, or we do,
fine.
Or, you know, and I think that that is.
And they might not even be able to hear us say that. They could be answering another call by the time we get to that point.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. I think that that is something that we overlook a lot, and the mental toll that it takes to do that continuously with close to no closure.
Last shift, Christina and I were actually talking about how, and this used to be pretty commonplace in our service, but crews, like field crews but sitting in with dispatch for like a shift, and then also them having the opportunity to ride out with us for not a whole shift, because our shifts are 24 hours, but like 8 hours or whatever, even like 6 hours, just to like kind of get a better understanding. Because I think also sometimes we give dispatch some hate.
Oh, for sure.
They give us some hate too, though.
We do. Because we're like, okay, why do you not know that?
Yeah, what do you mean?
And they're like, okay.
Why didn't you get PD here?
Yeah, you're like, well, for us, the person on the other end of this phone is two brain cells.
Yeah, exactly.
And so I cannot get any of the information you're yelling at me for on the radio.
Yeah.
And then vice versa. They'll status check us like 8 times when we're getting beat up.
Yeah, and I think, you know, Caitlin even said, like, I had to collect myself, and then I went right back to work. So you don't know the call that dispatcher may have just taken.
Yeah.
So give them some grace. Right. I can't imagine taking that call and then going back inside and taking a transfer or a nursing home labs call or something.
Yeah.
Lots to learn. Also, all the coping mechanisms. Like, she seemed like she had a great support system. If your services don't have things in place that are like, I don't know. What did she say? They had a peer support?
They had peer support, or like an EAP program that you can go through your service for. If they don't have any of that in place, like, locate your own resources.
Yeah. Before the tragedy.
Yes. Locate your resources, whether that's counseling or PTSD counseling or trauma counseling or therapy or psychiatry, any of it. Locate them before you think you'll need them.
Yeah.
And that way you can find them the day that you are like in the dumps.
And that's why I think it's also pretty nice. Like, it's a good idea if you're working in a field that could be this unpredictable and this scary, to have an established therapist. That way you don't have to wait for that new patient appointment. Like, I'm not saying you have to go every week or whatever, but like having someone where you have that contact, you've already had that new patient appointment, it's just a lot easier to get in a crisis.
Yeah, kind of like establishing care with a PCP.
Yeah, it's a way shorter to get a sick appointment than it is to get a new patient appointment.
Absolutely. So. I think in that vein, I do want to mention that the National Suicide Hotline is just the number 988.
Yeah, that's pretty easy to remember.
Yeah, so in the event that you find yourself in a situation that hopefully not like this woman was in.
Yes.
but if you ever do find yourself in a situation that you're that low, you can call 988 and they will get you resources and help you out. Well, I think that's going to wrap it up.
Yeah, thank you, Caitlin. Thank you, Layton. And thank you, Tyler.
For sure. And if you guys want to send in any other stories, they can be silly ghosty stories. They can be almost getting nap-napped by a patient.
Yeah.
And they can be something serious that you really had to take time and work through. I think all of those are things that we've experienced in EMS. And all of them are valuable in their own way. So if y'all want to send some our way, you can send them to lifeandsirenspod@gmail.com. This has been Life and Sirens, produced by three nerds trying to bring you content that you might actually care about.